Thanks to 1360. Good afternoon, sir. Darren Smith in San Diego. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited. Maybe we can trade Fernando Tatis Jr. for Russell Wilson. That'd be exciting.
It's all coming full circle now, isn't it? You're trading one infielder for another somehow, some way, and you end up with the guy who's going to be the quarterback there. Yeah, where would you want to start non-NBA? You want to start with your Bears, or you want to start with Tatis closure?
I want to start with Russell Wilson. I like how in the update, you know, the names are being read. It's like Russell Wilson wants to either go to the Cowboys, the Saints, the Raiders, or the Bears? Like, it was like, you know, as I read through, it was almost like it was italicized on the script. And look, that's how I read the Schefter tweet. It was like, come on, like, maybe he meant to type a different team. it just makes no sense. It's like, you know, especially for the crowd that, like, thinks, like, Russell Wilson is sort of, like, the beneficiary of, you know, a system where there's been, like, a great defense, and that's really been, like, the key to his success. It's like, go to the Bears, be totally exposed because they've got an awful offensive line. Their defense is not as good as you think it is. And their top receiver has no interest in being there, in Allen Robinson. That, like, why would you want to go to that situation? For the weather? It makes no sense. I don't get it.
I don't know. Maybe there's something about increasing your profile somehow in Chicago, no. The third largest city in the country. I don't know. I can't quite figure that one out. There's no connection to the head coach, right? Matt Nagy.
No. And I mean, I think, like, it is, I mean, it's interesting in the sense that, right, like, it's sort of, I mean, why would Theo Epstein never take the job with the Cubs, right? Is because if you could be the person that fixes this unsolvable problem, you do kind of ascend to a special level in a city. And Theo Epstein did it, you know, not to mention the fact that the Cubs are in this position now where, you know, it's all kind of imploding around them. It's one of those things. And I think maybe it's sort of the challenge of being the Bears guy. The thing that I think people need to understand is just how traumatic it is as a Bears fan to talk about this position. For years, every year the NFL does this, where they'll schedule the Bears to play the Packers either on Sunday night or Monday night or Thursday night, like in some big primetime slot. And every year they'll run the same graphic where it'll be the list of quarterbacks that have started for the Chicago Bears since Brett Favre's first start for the Packers. And this list is awful. And it is, I get triggered thinking about it. I'm sitting here right now in my home, kind of in the fetal position, even thinking about the time Steve Stenstrom played four games for the Bears, or the Josh McCown era, or the Henry Burris era, or God, I mean, you just start piling just bad Kyle Orton's neck beard. All of these things are just running through my head right now, and it is not a happy place.
Not a good time to bring up Fernando Tatis Jr.'s extension, then? Should we just move on to the Lakers and LeBron?
Congratulations, San Diego. We'll always have James Shields. James Shields is going to win the Cy Young this year for the White Sox, so it was a good trade.
Here's a pop quiz for you. Let me put you on the spot. Do you remember the name of the pitcher who was actually considered the centerpiece of the trade in exchange for James Shields? Because Tatis, nobody was talking about Tatis here. Let's be honest.
Oh,
nobody.
Gosh, it was,
so do you remember the name of the pitcher?
I it's like on the tip of my tongue, but I can't say it.
Eric Johnson. Yep. Eric with a K. Johnson.
Yeah, yes. Big, tall lefty, right?
Yeah, sounds right. Sounds right. Yeah, that was, well, I don't know, man. It feels like we're eating a lot of money for James Shields. Is this the right move to make for Eric Johnson? And then, you know, here a couple of years later, $350 million extension.
it is really fun watching sort of the Padres, like all of this stuff is timed out perfectly. Like, the rebrand is great. I guess, like, the retro rebrand and all of that stuff. And you've got a guy, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like, why wouldn't you want to play baseball in San Diego?
It's a great question. I don't have an answer to that. Yeah, I mean, I would love to play here. Even given the history of the franchise, where more times than not, this is what we said earlier this week, Dan, like, more times than not, the Padres were the White Sox in this equation. You know, they're the ones that traded away some future star player here who ended up going on to win a bunch of titles and make a bunch of money and go to a bunch of all-star games. So this is an unusual feeling here in this city. Let us be very clear. This is role reversal that we're not quite used to yet here in this town.
It is, you know, it's weird because it's like the same vibe in Chicago right now with the White Sox, and like people are actually like really, really legitimately excited about the prospects of the White Sox, and you've got Tim Anderson even out there saying nice things about Tony La Russa. you know, it's sort of exciting, but I just kind of look forward to, at some point in time in June, looking at my credit card statement, like, why did I pay this much for the MLB package to watch this? Like, it's usually June or July when that hits me, but it should be fun this year.
Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times, as you can tell through the first 11 minutes of this conversation, he covers the Lakers and he covers the NBA. Lakers have lost four straight. They lost to Utah last night, 114-89. Yeah. Utah's a very good team, at least record-wise, they're a very good team. So, Dan, what's going on here with Los Angeles? What's going on with the Lakers? We know that they're dealing with injuries. We know that they're dealing with some level of fatigue, be it physical, medical, or both. What's going on here?
I mean, I think we hit the three major points, right? You've got, on one side of the court, you've got the Utah Jazz, who are playing incredible, the best record in the league right now. Not wildly surprising, considering the expectations that were surrounding that team last year. They're better than they were last year. They're healthier. They're more connected. You know, I'm not stunned that they're playing well. It makes actually a lot of sense. What that means for the playoffs is kind of another discussion, but I think, you know, for a game at the end of February, that the fact that the Utah Jazz look like the better team is not that surprising. And it wouldn't even have been that surprising if the Lakers were at full strength. I think the second thing you mentioned is obviously the Lakers are absolutely not at full strength. Anthony Davis out, at least through the All-Star break. You've got Dennis Schroeder, who's been out all week as he's kind of gone through the COVID, testing, contact tracing sort of ringer, and there's hope that he'll be back tomorrow in time to play Portland. And then I think thirdly, you know, you said it, it's a combination of sort of mental and physical fatigue, that this was a team that was already sort of tired, and just through some sort of combination of their own carelessness on the court and some bad luck, has found themselves in a run of overtime games, a run of, you know, all these extra minutes and extra sort of intense minutes at that. And they just kind of look worn out. And I don't know that the All-Star break will solve that. I know the schedule's not going to get that much easier. You know, it might actually even get a little harder. And so it'll be really interesting to kind of watch the Lakers navigate this next chunk of schedule, because I think one of the hardest things to do in sports, especially in basketball, and it's funny, we're talking about the Padres and White Sox, and this will be a little bit of a challenge for them too, is when you have teams that have like real, real expectations, right? There comes a point in time in the season, usually out of the gates, you're excited and you've got kind of the newness of the season to sort of your gas, and that's what fuels you. But at a certain point, you'll look up and you'll look at the calendar and be like, we've got 3.5 months until we have to play in the playoffs, till like the games really, really count. And it's like, what do we do until then? You know, how do we manage that? And I think, you know, I think some people listen and say, well, the competition, the night in, night out competition should be good enough. And, you know, for some teams it is, but like you take a look at basketball right now and you see, if you're the Lakers, you know, you're going into these empty arenas mostly around the league. You're just kind of going through the motions. Markieff Morris said last night, like, yeah, we're going to make the playoffs. I think everybody knows, you know, as long as they're healthy, they're going to make the playoffs. And they're going to be judged by what happens there. So between now and then, what matters? And I think the Lakers have to answer that question. They have to find that. Last year, they wanted to win a lot of games. That drove them. They wanted to prove people wrong. They wanted to do stuff like that. I think this year it's a harder question to answer, and it's kind of an interesting sort of mental hurdle that they'll have to face.
Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times is joining us. And to Dan's point, I think it's important to remember this. If you're like, wow, the sky must be falling with the Lakers, they've lost four straight. They got their doors blown off by the Utah Jazz last night. They're also third in the West. They're 22-11, and they're without some of their most significant players. So, you know, it's, you know, these things all provide, they all require just a little bit of context. So for me, Dan, and you sort of touched on this just in your previous answer, it becomes a question of priorities. I know that your colleague Bill Plaschke is sort of preaching that maybe LeBron at his age, which, you know, is young for a regular life, but maybe not young in NBA terms, but that he should be thinking a little bit more pragmatism and maybe not pushing and playing as many minutes and playing as many games and playing back-to-back, et cetera. So is it too early to ask about, you know, where are the priorities? Like, how would you rank what the priorities are for the Lakers now at this point?
I mean, I think it's when it comes to LeBron, right, it's tricky because you can't really apply sort of base human logic to him, right, because he's just so superhuman physically and mentally in his approach to everything, right? Like, he's doing stuff already at this age that should be impossible. He did stuff last year at his age that should be impossible. He had his entire sort of routine disrupted, as did all the players in the league. But, you know, as a guy who is more ingrained in that routine than anybody else, like, should have been most affected. And he came back and was the best player in the bubble, right? And I think that's like a universal opinion in the NBA. Like, nobody in the bubble was as good as LeBron James was. And so I think it is interesting. I think you look at kind of the way he's played in February and you look at the minutes. I think nobody in the NBA has played more minutes than LeBron James has this month. And you kind of want to say, like, you know, sit this guy out a little bit. Like let's pump the brakes here. But LeBron said something the other night that reminded me of a conversation we had last season, earlier in the year. I was in Atlanta kind of subbing on the Laker beat for a trip. And after the scrum had kind of cleared out, I was talking to LeBron, and sort of in my role as like a national guy, I had said, you know, that there's one real gripe when I talk to execs and stuff about kind of what you guys are doing. And they all want to know, like, why are you guys pushing so hard? I think LeBron was on the injury report that game with like an injured shoulder, and he played. It was never even a question of whether or not he was going to play. And LeBron was like, if they think I'm pushing hard, they're wrong. And LeBron kind of said the same thing the other night when asked about that, about pushing himself. And he's like, yeah, I'm not really doing that. I'm just kind of doing what I always do right now. And, you know, with the notion that there's another level. Now, whether you want to believe that or whether you look at the shooting numbers and you look at things like him getting beat off the dribble and against Miami by Kelly Olynyk, leaving free throws short, shooting sub 20%, whatever it is from three, and say, like, is that true? That's an interesting question. But I think, you know, generally speaking, I mean, no disrespect to what Plashke wrote, I think he's spot on in a lot of ways. Generally, though, it's just sort of like, I kind of defer to LeBron on this stuff, right? I mean, hasn't he sort of earned it?
Well, and plus, I think it's pretty common knowledge, right, Dan, that he also invests a fortune into what it is and how it is that he keeps himself physically in shape, mentally in shape. It's not just showing up at the gym, right, or the Lakers facility. So, you know, I would have to think that sports science is probably a big part of what LeBron James is interested in. And, you know, maybe he can't push it the way he always has, but you can't tell me that you're investing that much money and staying in shape and somebody's not addressing some of these things to you, that you're not accounting for it in some capacity.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think so. I mean, look, I think it's, you know, there's a certain level of, like, the science is what the science is. And then, you know, there's like a little bit of an eye test too, which is like kind of a fun thing that people are talking about on Twitter anyways today. But it's like, when it comes to LeBron and sort of his load, like, you know, after the, who did they lose to two games in the Washington game, right? Was that the last game they lost at home? I can't remember. You know, after that game, before they went to Utah, you know, the kind of the talk on press row was sort of like, you know, like, why even play it against the Jazz? Like, they're going to lose that game almost assuredly anyways. You know, that seems like a perfect one for him just to stay home. He's been on the injury report with an ankle injury all year. Seems like a good time for that to maybe flare up, you know, and take a day. But, like, that's just not how he operates. And I think that, well, certainly that's not how he's operated in his time with the Lakers. And whether it's the pride and the investment of time and energy he puts into being available or the genuine knowledge that, I mean, right now, like, without him, like, the Lakers really don't have a chance. For whatever reason, he's decided to keep showing up to work every day. And I guess, you know, on one hand, we should probably applaud that instead of saying, you know, this guy really needs to slow down.
By the way, the next, you mentioned it, the four-game skid, Brooklyn, Miami, Washington, as you mentioned, at Utah last night. Next four up, Portland, very good, yep, playoff team. Golden State, hanging around there, bottom of the Western Conference standings. Phoenix, which is playing potentially for opening round games in their building. And then that Sacramento, where you got a bunch of athletes as well. So, you know, this now, I know a four-game losing streak, it feels like a crisis in Laker terminology, you know, and this just happens. It's the ebb and flow of a regular season. But you look ahead on the schedule, you know, these are some interesting opponents up next for the club.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk yourself into four becoming seven pretty quickly, right? Like, it's not that hard to do. And I think, we do a newsletter at the LA Times where I kind of send out some Laker thoughts every week. And this week's was sort of like, this was before the Utah game, and I had written in there that they were going to probably lose the game anyways, but like sort of like, here are the reasons to not be like super freaked out, right, Darren? It was that the biggest reason, obviously the most obvious reason, is that you're missing 40% of your starting lineup. And I think when you view it that way, it's an alarming, like, if you didn't have 40% of your bank account tomorrow, like, that would probably affect you. It would affect me. you know, like, you would miss that. And I think that's sort of, you know, that's where the Lakers are at in terms of, like, overall firepower. But really, like, I think the thing to take the most comfort in is that even though Anthony Davis has played the way he's played this year, which has not been great, you know, LeBron and AD on the court together have still been awesome. And the numbers support that. The two-man lineup data, you know, shows, I think, that they were, going into last night, the fourth best in the league. And of those other three ahead of them, like, they were really the only true, like, sort of superstar combo. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, number one in the league. The Jazz are playing awesome. That makes sense. But, you know, that's still kind of the equation, is that there are all these other flaws on the team. And they're going to be flaws, right? Like, they're not the greatest shooting team. They don't have an amazing offense. But they have a really good defense. And then every night they roll the ball out on the court, they feel pretty confident they've got the two best players. That's really not going to change. I will say the one exception to that is that, you know, as I've watched the Clippers and as I've watched the Brooklyn Nets, you start to ask yourself, like, is the level of competition going to be better than it was last year? And I think that answer is yes. I think that the Lakers have to be better than they were last year, because I think the Nets are certainly better than any team that the Lakers had to deal with in the Eastern Conference last year. They're certainly more talented. I think when you look in the West and you've got the Clippers and you've got the Jazz and who knows about the Suns and kind of what their ceiling is, it just feels like there's, like, you know, friskier teams kind of there. And look, repeating's hard. And to repeat this year is going to be really, really hard.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron has so spoiled us that he changes the way we analyze things, you know, because he dragged he dragged one of the worst teams that I've ever seen into the finals with Cleveland, you know, and that post Kyrie stage, and you're sort of used to saying, oh no, what's going on with LeBron, because you know you're without Anthony Davis, one of the best players in the league, and shooter. So, like, he really has spoiled us. He's just completely altered the way that we view this stuff and the way we think about this stuff and the way we talk about this stuff because of the superhuman things that he's done in the past that have made no sense whatsoever and are hard to
explain. Yeah. Well, and we also have to remember, too, judging that if history's told us anything, right, that making these big league shooting declarations, you know, 40 games before the postseason is, like, just, like, a really easy way to look foolish. You know, and it's just a good reminder that it's like, you know, that the team that the Lakers are today very well might not be the team that plays. I mean, look, they hope it's not the team that opens the playoffs. They hope they're either A, have a more talented roster, or B, are a more connected and understanding team. And I think one of those two things is certainly a probability of happening, right, if not both. So, look, these things happen, and the Lakers are not playing well. And if you want to be a sky's falling person, which is certainly, I think, possible, like, that's a plausible reaction, I don't even look to the losing streak. I actually looked to the 7-game winning streak before the losing streak. You know, when they didn't shoot the ball well, when they struggled, and eked by, you know, the Pistons, and they eked by the Thunder, who only had 8 players on the roster. You know, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wasn't one of them in one of those games. And you look at that team that didn't play very well in those games, eked out a win in Boston, didn't play very well, one in Atlanta, didn't play very well, and you're kind of like, you know, that to me is when you could, I think, I started to see, like, the seedlings of fatigue, and that's a tricky one to catch, right? Like, it's kind of hard to get your legs back, and it's going to be really hard to get them this season. So if you want to be worried about something, that's what I would be most worried about. But again, like I said, it's such a long year.
Excellent conversation, as always. Dan, we thank you. Appreciate your time.
All right, Dan, go Padres.
Thank you. There you go. That's Dan Wojcicki. Converted out of necessity here from his time as a White Sox fan.
I just want to say that, like, normally, like, we are grateful to the guests for spending their time and lending their stories and their expertise. I actually think today maybe Dan should thank you. I felt that was therapy for a tortured Chicago sports fan. Huh. That's what I felt in that conversation. My number two takeaway is I feel like the universe wants you to have a newsletter. Because he just Dan brought up unprompted, hey, you don't have a newsletter.
Got a newsletter
unlike
here
you,
at the LA Times.
Unlike you three losers, I have a newsletter. Yeah, what do you have, Darren? That's what I got.
That's what I don't have, Marty. I don't have a newsletter.
No, you don't.
No newsletter here.
Jim, how's that going, that template?
It's getting there.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. You went to work on that last night?
Oh, yeah, I did, yeah.
Well, honestly, a little bit. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, we have the font figured out. We're going to go purple.
Font?
Purple.
What?
That's a color. What do you mean? What's the font?
I'm sorry, the color.
New Roman?
Arial, I'm sorry. I'm zoomed out. Sorry about that.
Zoom.
Purple.
Purple tier?
No. maybe it's the tears and the zooms getting to me.
You think?
Yeah, I do. I'm like cracking on the zooms. I really am. They're getting to me.
All right.
Just a little bit.
Well, we look forward to a Zoom recap of Marty Caswell when we return on Next.